Welcome to Woodsfield. Welcome to the Woodsfield Church of Christ. If you're visiting with us, glad you could make it with us this morning to worship our God together. And we ask that if you haven't already, you fill out one of those little pew cards on the pew back in front of you. It's not just for doodling during the sermon. There is a point for them to be there. So if you could just fill one out and drop it in the box on the way out as you exit, so we know who you are if we missed you. So we can greet you and know you were here. Thankful that you are here this morning. And just a couple of things real quickly. And if you wanted to go ahead and start turning to John chapter 10, we're going to be in John 10 this morning, actually starting a new sermon series. We finished Mark out. I know some of you are so excited. And it seems like we were Mark forever. And by the way, I picked the shortest gospel, so I was trying to get through, you know. we spent probably, I don't know, if it would have been all in one shot, it would have been over a year in Mark still. And Mark is the shortest gospel by about 9 or so chapters. I don't know, maybe 7 chapters. But anyway, we're going to be in John 10, and the series is going to be The Abundant Life. And I'll share more about that in a minute as we get closer. Just a couple quick things real briefly to you. Some of you might have noticed on the announcements or in the bulletin this morning that Abby and I are leaving. We're going out of town for a couple weeks for a delayed anniversary trip. I know many of you are like, well, you're going to be gone for good here in like a month. Why are you leaving now? This just happened to coincide with the end of our time here as well. But we had originally planned on taking a 10-year anniversary trip in 2020, which I don't have to tell you what happened in 2020. We won't talk about it. But the trip has been postponed like I've forgotten how many times over the last 2 years. So we're finally getting a chance to go on this trip. And so we'll be gone 2 weeks total, but it'll be over one Sunday. So we'll just miss next week with you all. And we'll be back on the 18th to continue our series. So that's where that's going. Also, just because I'm excited about this, and I think you should be too, we are going to take a group of teens, anybody that's interested, to go to the North Hills Youth Rally in September here in a few weeks. And so there's some more information in the bulletin about that and on the back of the board out there in the foyer. Would encourage any interested teens to to sign up. Ask Myrna Bettinger for any further information. Amanda Bates, I think, is involved in that too. Or myself, if I can help you, we'll get you signed up. We're excited to do that. The cost is paid for by the church. We want to be able to send anybody that wants to go. So don't worry about the money. If you'd like to go to the North Hills Youth Rally and you're a student in grades 7 through 12, I would encourage you to go to that. All right. That being said, oh, Jeff Seidler also would be a person to ask. That's right. That's who I should have said. Ask questions of Jeff Seidler if you're interested in that. All right. John chapter 10. So, as I mentioned to you, last week we finished up our time in Mark and the ending of the Gospel of Mark. And as I was thinking about the end of the series in Mark, you know, it's always been nice. Preachers love to preach through books because they don't have to think too much about what's next. It's just the next passage, the next chapter, the next verse, whatever is next. So I was thinking as I was closing out the Gospel of Mark, what am I going to speak on next? What am I going to share with you next? And then, of course, I was reflecting on our time growing short here in the pulpit, at least for me to be able to speak to you. And I'm thinking, what do I want to share with you as kind of a last message as I part? And so this I guess, might be the last message with you, the last series with you, and I wanted to make it count. I often, in ministry, you work with people, obviously, and dealing with spiritual problems of life. That's kind of, you know, the minister is the spiritual person in somebody's life to deal with issues, to deal with problems, to deal with just struggles. And I haven't been in ministry a terribly long time, a little over a decade, but it's enough to know that there's often this feeling that we have as people that even when we are engaged in congregational life, in the church, in ministry of some kind, we're regularly active, we're regularly involved, we're doing all the things that we're supposed to do, as it were, there's often this feeling that we have that there's got to be more than this. There's something that's just not quite right. Like, I'm just missing something in my life. And if I could just get whatever it is, that it would be better. Maybe my marriage is always struggled, and I'm not really sure where that is, what to do with that. It's always been that way, and I've never known how to handle that. Or maybe it's, you know, I'm going through the parenting years, and I feel like I'm failing at everything. I don't feel like I'm getting it. Each child's got its own issues, and I don't know how to deal with it. Or maybe you're looking at the end of your life. You're retired, and you're looking at the years you have left, and you just think, what am I supposed to do with this time in my life? I don't understand what to do with the next couple decades or so, if God blesses me to be here for that long. And what should I do with this period of time where I'm not as tied into a job or a family life as I was 20, 30 years ago? Or maybe it's financially. Maybe it's just, I don't know, something's always missing in our finances, and I'm not really sure how to do this better. I knew I could be doing it better, but how could I be doing it better? There's this passage in John chapter 10, and we're going to read it. We already read it, but we're going to look at it a little bit more in depth this morning as it kicks off our sermon series, where Jesus talks about living the abundant life. He says, I have come that they may have life, and not just have life, but have it more abundantly. And so what I want to do this morning in the coming weeks is to talk about the abundant life. How can we as Christians have an abundant life in Jesus? It doesn't mean that things are always going to be perfect, 100% hunky-dory, everything's going great. But it does mean that we as believers have a different perspective on life and how to live it well. And so that by the time we get to the end of life, we look back on our years and think, you know what, it wasn't perfect. I didn't do everything right. But I did as best I could, and I think I did a pretty good job. So what would it take for you to live your life in looking back in the rearview mirror of your life and think, you know what? It was good. It was really good. I've had an abundant life. I was able to enjoy what God blessed me with, what God came to give me in His Son Jesus. And so we're going to look at several topics over the next few weeks and kind of break it down. Finances, marriage, all these different kinds of places that we find ourselves in life where we often ask that question, what am I missing? To kick it off, though, I wanted to share this video with you because I think it's so poignant as we think about the question that is often under the surface of our lives that we ask ourselves. And I believe that if you asked anybody on the street, Christian, non-Christian, it wouldn't matter. It would be the same question. What's this all about? What's all of this for? Why am I here? How can I live a better life? Most of us are just trying to answer those questions as we go through life. How can I do this better? How can I be a fill-in-the-blank better? In 2005, Steve Croft, of 60 Minutes fame, I don't think he's still with 60 Minutes. It's been a while since he did any interviews, but he used to be a 60 Minutes guy and he sat down in 2005 with Tom Brady, then a young, up-and-coming NFL quarterback, and of course many of us know now Tom Brady's career. Seems like he's kind of on the backside of his career now, but he's had a good run. I mean, goodness gracious, almost 20 years worth of 20 years worth of NFL career. Drafted in 2000, within the first 5 years of his NFL career, won 3 Super Bowls. And at age 27, Steve Croft sits down with Tom Brady and asks, what's next? I mean, just imagine. I'm going to show you a little clip from this video interview here back in 2005. I want you to put yourself in the place of a young 27-year-old NFL quarterback, okay? You've played college ball. You were good enough. Well, let's back it up. You played high school football. You were good enough of a very small percentage of those who play in college or high school to make it to college, to get a college scholarship. Plays in college. Decent quarterback, okay. Nothing too incredibly impressive as far as the standards for the NFL go, but you're able to make it through. You make it through the combine, you make it through the draft, is selected to play for the New England Patriots. I mean, most people would say, this is it. You know, this is as good as it's going to get, man. I'm playing the NFL, I'm playing in the big leagues. But it doesn't stop there. It wins a starting spot, starting quarterback position for the New England Patriots. And within his first several years in the NFL, wins 3 Super Bowls, something that many quarterbacks don't even get to do once in their entire career, even to appear for a Super Bowl. And here he is at 27, having won 3 Super Bowls and would go on to win more. And Steve Croft asks this question, what's next? Listen to this answer.
Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life is me. I thank God. It's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. I mean, I've done it. I'm 27. And what else is there for me?
What's the answer?
I wish I knew. I mean, I think that's part of me trying to go out and experience other things. But I love playing football and I love being the quarterback for this team. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of other parts about me that I'm trying to find. And different ways of expression, being around. I know what ultimately makes me happy are family and friends. And positive relationships with great people. And I think I get more out of that than anything.
I love that answer and the expression on Tom Brady's face, because I think it says it all. That wince. I wish I knew. There's got to be more than this. You know, they talk about Olympians having won the gold medal, and they say that it's not uncommon for those who reach some level like that in their sports career to immediately, almost right after it happens, to experience a very deep depression. Because there's this incredible high. They've trained for years and years, their entire life, to get to this point. And here they are in their 20s or 30s maybe. And they've reached it all. They've attained what it was that they were searching for. And then they realize that this is it. There's nothing else for me to explore. There's nothing else for me to discover. Nothing new mountains to conquer anymore. And so what is my purpose in life? And there has to be a greater purpose in our lives, folks. If there is going to be something that drives us for the rest of our lives, there has to be something bigger than the next job, than the next, whatever it is, accomplishment that you think of in your life that I want to do. And when I attain whatever it is, I'll be satisfied. No, you won't. No, you won't. And I would argue with you, and this is what we're going to look at in the next few weeks, is that it's only in Jesus where our ultimate fulfillment and satisfaction in life comes from. Because only He can give us the abundant life that you and I are ultimately looking for as we live in this world. So let's turn to John chapter 10 and look at a little bit with this story, what happens in John chapter 10. Now I'm going to back up, as I often do. You know, I like to back up and get all the details in the background. So I'm going to give you what is happening before this in John chapter 9, because I think for us to understand Jesus' discussion in John chapter 10 correctly, we need to also know what just happened in John chapter 9. John chapter 9 is the famous story of Jesus healing the man who was born blind. And just to review it, I won't read it for you, but if you're unfamiliar with the story, Jesus and the disciples stumble upon this man that's been born blind. He is born this way, always been this way, and the disciples have this question because they always believe that somebody who is born that way sinned. Either he or his parents sinned, and so they think that there's something wrong in his life, something that made this person born blind. And Jesus says, no, he wasn't born. These things happened so that the glory of God could be manifested through him. So Jesus heals this man born blind. Everybody knew who he was. There was no question that he was blind, okay? And all of a sudden, there's this big stink that's been stirred up in Jerusalem. And so the Pharisees call in the blind man to question him, you know, seeing if he's really been healed and what's going on, and they don't like his answer, and they end up kicking him out of the synagogue. A sad reality for someone who just had been healed. You would think that they would be happy and celebrating his healing, and yet here he is being kicked out of the synagogue because the Jews, the Pharisees, didn't like Jesus and how it all went down. And so Jesus has a conversation that the blind man comes to Jesus and starts to talk to Jesus, and Jesus finds out about what has happened, that they've kicked him out. And then there's some Pharisees that are standing nearby. And Jesus is asked this question by the Pharisees: are we also blind? In verse 40 of chapter 9. And Jesus says to them, verse 41, if you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, we see, your guilt remains. In other words, you think you're not blind because you think you're not blind. You're blind. And then he continues into chapter 10. And in chapter 10, Jesus gives the I am the good shepherd statements. But it's all hinging off of what just happened, because this conversation in chapter 10 is a continuation of the story in chapter 9. Jesus is still in front of this crowd after this man has been healed. He's still talking to Pharisees. And ultimately what he's going to do is he's going to talk about a thief and a robber and a hired hand. And throughout this passage, I'm going to read it in its more of its entirety for you to get you in, you know, kind of engage with the picture a little bit more. But you'll hear Jesus reference the thief, the robber, the hired hand. And throughout this passage, basically, Jesus is setting himself up in contrast to the religious leaders as the good shepherd, doing what the religious leaders have not. Because the religious leaders have taken advantage of, manipulated, abused the sheep. They've kicked them out of the fold. They haven't done well as a shepherd at all. And Jesus is saying, I am the good shepherd. And so here's what he says in verses 1 of chapter, and following of chapter 10. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus said to them again, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I receive from my Father. Jesus presents himself here as the good shepherd. Now, a couple things about shepherds and sheep. You may know some of this. But as far as the good shepherd, when you think of the good shepherd, when Jesus is talking about himself as the good shepherd in this passage, what do you think of? I mean, just get the image in your mind of the good shepherd. Chances are, it's probably this nice picture on the wall of your grandmother's house of Jesus and a staff in his hand and then a sheep in another hand, and he's a nice combed hair, a nice clean robe, you know, long hair and beard, nice presentable figure. Okay, that's erase that picture, because that's not a shepherd. In the first century, shepherds, when we think of a shepherd, we think of sheep, we think of a meek, mild-mannered, very gentle kind of person. No, that's not a shepherd. Clean. In the first century, shepherds were rough and rugged guys. They lived with their sheep in a field 24/7. What would you look like if you came out of a field, sleeping on the ground, rolling in sheep poop, okay? Looked pretty dirty, right? Looked pretty smelly, rugged. It was a dangerous job. I mean, Jesus even references some of these things that were expected of shepherds. They were expected to lay their life, literally lay their life down for their sheep. They protected the sheep. If a robber, a thief would come, and it often happened that people would come and try to steal sheep, or if an animal would come, a wild animal comes to take one of the sheep, it's your job to defend it. David even talks about this in the Psalms, or in his conversation with Saul and King Saul, as he's trying to convince Saul to let him go fight the lion, or let him fight Goliath. You remember, he says, "I've killed a lion with my bare hands. I killed a bear once with my sling. I've fought off all these animals." Being a shepherd was a dangerous job, and it was a rugged, hard, tiresome job. And Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. I give my all, my 100% effort to this work that I've dedicated my life to, that I protect my sheep, and I'm there for their well-being and their benefit." And then in this description of himself as the good shepherd, Jesus says that he came in order that we may have life, his sheep may have life, and not just have any life, but have it abundantly. Now, here's another stereotype. Most of us, when we read that particular phrase in that section, probably think that Jesus is referencing something of an eternal life. That Jesus came so that we may have life and have it abundantly. Yeah, he's talking about his death, his burial, you know, coming to earth to save us, and that sometime, somewhere in the distant future, you and I, when we die, we'll go up to the great sky in the by and by, and we'll be able to eat pie and rhyme with why. I don't know. Just excuse me for a minute. But it's somewhere else. It's not here. It's some other time, other place. And it's so far removed from our current reality that most of us read right over that and we think, yeah, that's nice, someday, right? Not now. That doesn't fix my marriage. That doesn't fix my finances. That doesn't fix my problems with my kids or my grandkids or the issues I'm having at work. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. Jesus is talking about right here, right now, because for Jesus, the kingdom of heaven has come. It is coming, and it is already here. And Jesus sees the beginning of his ministry as the beginning of the kingdom of heaven coming to earth, that he starts this process of reconciling all things to himself, that the abundant life that he's talking about is a here and now life that you get to start right now. As you enter his sheepfold, you get to enjoy the abundant life that the shepherd, the good shepherd, has for you. And so as we think about what Jesus is describing, he's talking about giving his sheep, the good shepherd, giving his sheep abundant life, leading them to green pastures, cool waters, better places. Happy, healthy, fat little sheep. Now, would you describe your life right now as happy, healthy, abundant? Or would you describe it as depressing, dysfunctional, and desert-like? When you read Psalm 23, and you read about being led to green pastures and being led to cool waters and restoring my soul and all these descriptions about the life of the sheep, does that resonate with you? Because that's where you're at. If it's the latter rather than the former, something's wrong. What would it look like for God to give us abundant life in 2022? What would it look like for God to lead us to spiritual health, to places of contentment? Not that everything's always 100% perfect in our life. I'm not describing this utopian existence where nothing ever goes wrong, okay? That's not real life. That's not reality. You know that. I know that. But somewhere in between that and maybe where we are, there's something that God wants for us, something more, something better. That you and I stumble through life often and try to find it, whatever it is, and we're not sure where it falls, where it exists, because it's always out of our grasp. So as we look at the next few weeks, I want to look at some of this abundant life with you and try to answer that question, what is it that I'm missing? What is this particular part of life? And how could I maybe manage things better to be able to enjoy what God is wanting to give me, because God wants to give it to us. It's not that it's dangling in front of us like this little carrot on a stick. It's always just outside of our grasp. Jesus wants your life with Him to be different than it was before. God wants your walk with Him to be meaningful and important as you begin your eternal journey with Him. And so the question this morning that I want to look at is, what is the key to the abundant life? If we could kind of make an umbrella statement over everything that we're going to talk about and define all of these specific topics that we'll get into in the next few weeks with one major kind of driving point and push, here's what I want to leave you with. Go back to the section that we talked about earlier from the Good Shepherd, earlier in chapter 10. I want to key in on something that Jesus says at the beginning of this conversation, verses 3 through 6. Let me just point out a few things from these four verses. He says, the sheep hear His voice. The sheep follow Him, for they know His voice. A stranger they will not follow, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Now, I left a lot of things out of that passage, but I wanted you to hear certain phrases throughout those few verses. The sheep hear His voice. The sheep follow Him, the Good Shepherd, for they know His voice. A stranger they will not follow, for they do not know the voice of strangers. The key to living an abundant life in Jesus Christ is, who are you listening to? Who are you following? Jesus says, my sheep will know my voice, and they'll follow me. They don't know the voice of strangers. What other strange voices are you listening to in your life right now? What other things are you doing, engaged in, things that you're allowing in your head, in your heart, to pull you astray? You know it's not good for you. Why do you listen to it? And you find yourself in this frustrating place spiritually where you're doing this stuff, whatever, listening to these voices, and then you come in on church on Sunday morning, one day a week, and you think this is going to fix it all. It doesn't fix it. Because 6 days a week, we're listening to other stuff. We're doing other things. We're not engaged with the Good Shepherd. We're not following His voice. I love this picture of a Good Shepherd because we often get the picture of a shepherd wrong. Because our ideas of shepherding are different than one that Jesus would be familiar with. When I think of modern day shepherding, I think of the movie Babe. It's going to be really weird. Hang on for a second. I promise it's going somewhere. Anybody ever see the movie Babe? That'll do, pig. That'll do. That's the only line I remember from the movie. But Babe is this pig. He thinks he's a sheepdog, right? He was raised with sheepdogs. He thinks he's a sheepdog. He's in England where there are sheep. There's also sheep in Calais, but that's beside the point. There's sheep in England. He's in England. And in these scenes where Babe is sheep herding, he's doing the shepherd dog thing. What is he doing? What does a sheepdog do? He gets behind the sheep and pushes them, right? He bites their ankles. He moves them this way. He moves them that way. And if you watch a sheepdog, they're fascinating because they're always trying to herd something, right? It's an instinct they're bred into to be able to herd some group of people or something. So we're familiar with shepherding being pushing and scaring sheep into going where we want them to go. But the shepherding that Jesus was familiar with in the first century, and by the way, it's still like this if you go to the Middle East today, it was a relational familiarity with the sheep because the shepherd lived with them. Any of you ever have livestock that you raise from like that? And you're out there every day working with them and they got to know you really well? What do they end up doing? You go out in the pasture, bam, they're right on your butt, right? They're there. And they'll follow you all around because there's a familiarity and there's a relationship and they know your voice. You could shout at them in the middle of the pasture, you could call to them, and they'll come running because they know your voice. This is the kind of relationship that a shepherd had with his sheep. And it's really neat. I got to see this one time. The shepherd will move his sheep to different pastures, to cool water, to different places to graze and herd, and he'll walk ahead of the sheep. And he usually doesn't have to say anything because the sheep just follow him. But if he does, he calls out to them, they know his voice, and they follow. Jesus says, that's how I want you to be. I want you to know my voice. I want to be in relationship with you. I want you to be familiar with me. Enough so that when I move, you move. When I want you to go somewhere, you go somewhere. When I want you to stay away from this thing over here, you stay away from that thing over there. The problem that you and I have with living the abundant life is that we're not always as in tune with the shepherd as we should be. We're not familiar enough. We hear other people calling our name. We hear other things that are vying for our attention. It's entirely possible to be a Christian, but to be following something or someone else on the side. This is the story of God's people throughout all of creation, throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's always been about competing attention and at a competing time. God wanting his people to follow him, but they're not always as interested in them following him as he is. And so this morning I want to follow up and ask the question, how about you? Are you following the voice of the shepherd? Do you know his voice? If he did that to you, would you know? Or would you be confused because it's unfamiliar and you've never heard it before? Do you want the abundant life? We'll follow up this lesson with several other more specifics. Invite you to come back. Obviously, I won't be here next Sunday for the next lesson, but following Sunday, we'll pick it up and invite you to come back and join us as we go through this series together. I'm excited about it, and I hope we can explore and discover things together about what it means to live the abundant life. Brian's going to come back up and lead us in a song, and if you need to respond to the message this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.